Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. Today's program is going to be especially rich in that regard, not in the classified sense, of course, but in terms of serious content about some of the most difficult national security challenges we're facing, from a man whom I have come to regard as a tremendous resource on all of these matters, a patriot of the first order, a man with a long and distinguished pedigree of service to our country, notably in the uniform of the United States Army, from which he retired as a full colonel, with a background in special operations, civil affairs, and psychological operations. He also served in the Office of the Secretary of Defense as the Director of Cybersecurity Policy Strategy and International Affairs. His name is Colonel John Mills, and it is a pleasure to say welcome to him once again. John, thank you for that service and that you're continuing to render as a member, I believe a founding member, of the Committee on the Present Danger China as well. It's good to have you back.
Oh, thank you, Frank. An honor is always, sure appreciated.
Well, thank you for giving generously of your time. We're going to try to get as much of an hour as we can in this conversation with you. I want to start with China. You have spent much of your professional life, I think, thinking about studying and working both in uniform and as a civilian in the Pentagon to counter the threat that the Chinese Communist Party represents. How would you characterize that threat at the moment, John? And is it intensifying?
Oh, yeah, Frank, absolutely. The threat is, it's existential, it's direct, it's immediate, it's real, and we need to address it. We need to sweat now. Let's sweat now, or we're going to have to pay a lot later, and that includes blood. So my vote is to sweat now.
And when you say sweat now, obviously you're speaking of, you know, taking full measure of the various ways in which the Chinese are essentially at war with us. They call it a people's war. They call it unrestricted warfare. And then, you know, taking appropriate steps to respond to it. Let's start with just teasing out some of the most important manifestations of that people's war, the unrestricted warfare techniques they're using, John Mills. We'll come to cyber warfare maybe in the next block, but how would you describe the broad front that is currently now being utilized to try to do what to us? Take us down?
Absolutely. It is patently obvious at this point in time to any reasoned, temperate national security professional, Xi and the Chinese Communist Party have one goal, and that's to retire us, peacefully or otherwise. And nothing is off the table. So this is not hyperbolic. This is not alarmism, as I was just reading in an article a few minutes ago. This is real, and we need to up our game to face it, deter it, stare it down, because any ambiguity is an absolute invitation to rapid escalation of military and whatever it takes. The Wuhan lab original outbreak may have been an accident. There's no question that the original virus outbreak came out of Wuhan. May have been accidental, maybe not intentional, but biowarfare is absolutely on the table, and we're probably experiencing second, third, and fourth generations of targeted, tailored, DNA-focused bio-outbreaks. No question about it.
The way I've thought about it, John, is, and I think this is what you're really getting at, the Chinese may or may not have intentionally unleashed this on us, but they certainly have taken full advantage of the effects of a seemingly bioengineered disease and learned from it a sort of proof of concept, if you will, of what they could do with an intentional attack, a biological warfare attack, right?
Absolutely. They got away with it. I'm convinced the first outbreak was accidental. From that point on, like you said, they played it. They saw the dramatic strategic effects of the virus itself on our population. But the fear, the dissension, the polarization, they played that. And they had many willing, willful accomplices within the United States that, unfortunately, this is, I think, is extremely disturbing, but felt they had a common bedfellow with China, and they used that to essentially conduct a long-term coup, which is still in progress.
So when you talk about a coup, that clearly is intervening in our internal affairs in a very problematic way. But they also have, unfortunately, made clear their intention. This is not something, again, we're speculating about. They wanted to remove Donald Trump from power. And it seems, in a variety of ways, that this unrestricted warfare was used to that end. You've worked on the election issues, John. You've worked on the cyber issues. You have, of course, focused on the larger military capabilities that are of the unconventional kind, the biological warfare sorts, as well as the more traditional. Is there any doubt in your mind that these were all marshaled by the Chinese Communist Party for the purposes, as you say, well, a coup, of decapitating, in effect, the President of the United States, taking him out in this election cycle by bringing such capabilities, short of full-on military operations, obviously, but basically everything else was full-on?
I think there is distinct evidence supporting this. This is, again, these are not wild assertions. You study their doctrine. There was issuances in 2010, 2014 that talked specifically about leveraging biological warfare as the strategic, this is the Golan Heights of strategic operations. They specifically called it biological warfare, the strategic commanding heights of the great showdown with the United States. They lose 50 million, that's nothing. We lose 50 million, I mean, that's everybody in Australia, everybody in Canada, and a good chunk of the American population.
John, hold that thought. I mean, we've got to come back to this. I have to take a short break. We'll be right back with more with Colonel John Mills right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are visiting with Colonel John Mills, United States Army retired, man who served in both the uniform of the United States Army, of course, as well as in a civilian capacity in senior ranks of the U.S. Defense Department. And John, you were just talking about something that is very much on my mind, which is the degree to which the Chinese Communist Party has, in fact, violated its treaty obligations to forgo biological warfare research, development, production capabilities, and certainly use. It seems as though they're almost entirely getting a pass for having done that. I mean, there's a lot of talk about COVID and where it came from and was it tied to this Wuhan Institute of Virology laboratory and so on. But it does seem as though the larger backdrop to this, and as you say, their purported willingness to use biological warfare for purposes, well, their former defense minister is on record saying Deng Xiaoping intended to use it to depopulate the United States so it could be colonized by China. Do you credit all that? And if so, what does it tell us about the kinds of folks that we're up against?
Yeah, we're not making this up. This is documented. This is public. This is public facing. Read your opponent's literature. They read everything. I have been accosted after giving presentations by essentially Chinese, we'll call them intelligence agents in Silicon Valley. They will interrogate you on everything you've ever written. We need to read everything they put out. If they say things like this, like you just said, and they have, take it at face value. This is a showdown. Like it or not, it is a showdown. I have gone through the Biological Warfare Treaty in detail. It's essentially, I would call it the last of the five or six grand treaties of the Cold War era. And that it's kind of like election integrity. It is so vague. It's trust and don't verify. You could drive an 18-wheeler sideways with 100 feet on each end through the Biological Warfare Treaty, and they could still say they are adhering.
And arguably they are.
You bet they are. And they can say with a straight face they're adhering to the treaty. This is silly. This is ridiculous. Yes, CDC was still pushing funds through essentially some of the departments and agencies with the quaint concept that China was still a developing nation. Fauci was personally involved. This is not, we're not making this stuff up. This is not extremism. This is actually factually documented. And this is crazy town.
So, John, just to drill down on this, what you're talking about, I believe, is Dr. Fauci was personally involved in the migration of what's called gain-of-function experiments on coronaviruses from, I believe it was the University of North Carolina, where it was shut down, I believe back in the Obama years, to the Wuhan Institute of Virology, where that work was continued and underwritten by the U.S. taxpayer. Have I got that right? And what are the implications if it is right?
This shows the out-of-control nature of the behemoth federal government, where the left hand doesn't know what the right hand, doesn't know what the foot, doesn't know what the eye. It is impossible to properly orchestrate this monster. And on one loading dock, we're criticizing them. On the other loading dock, we're sending them money. This is crazy. And yes, it is real. If you're
sending the money for specific dangerous activities that are very much tied into biological weapons applications, if they choose to do so.
No? Yeah, this is absolutely. This is and the pivot in the Obama administration was really the OPM breach of 2015 that really angered the Obama administration, where they started finally at the very end, before they focused on investigating a presidential candidate. And they really realized it shocked them. And there's some glimpses of positive nature inside the current administration. I'm hoping that they continue with the Trump doctrines in place, no matter how they may politically criticize them. There are some who are essentially continuing and embracing them. I'm hopeful, but I'm guarded, and it remains to be seen. But
I know you have a piece coming out in Epoch Times on that point. The jury, I guess, is still somewhat out, but there is for the evidence that the Trump policies may be perpetuated, or perhaps other robust decisions taken. Plenty of evidence that there is a desire to accommodate China and to perhaps relax those policies or simply dispense with them altogether? I'm thinking particularly, John, of one I know you have been very engaged on, and that is our practice of underwriting the Chinese Communist Party's companies with American investors' funds, including through investments in companies that are directly tied to the People's Liberation Army and the military-industrial complex of China. The Biden administration has put on hold efforts to that Trump made late in his term to prevent that sort of thing from happening. Again, if that is going to be relaxed and allowed and perhaps even encouraged by the Biden team, this would be a very bad thing, would it not?
Yes, this is. I don't know if the confusion and murkiness on some of the decisive Trump rules, if it's real or if they're intentionally creating fuzziness on it. They've cited the rulemaking process, the law from the late 1940s that was meant to limit government, not create a fourth branch of government, which has created a fourth branch of government. The rulemaking process is just, it's unbelievable how it's become a fourth branch of government.
The administrative state that through regulatory action and the like can make policy and indeed make law in effect.
Yeah, it is. We got to call it for what it is. That is a fourth branch of government. That nowhere in the Constitution does it talk about this administrative state. And I've lived it. I've lived it for 35 plus years, and it is painful and dangerous to our republic.
It is indeed. John, speaking of things that are being done sort of within the bureaucracy of the U.S. government, as you also know from a lot of hard experience, the old Reagan dictum, personnel is policy, applies. I wouldn't ask you to, make sweeping generalizations, but I would be interested in your thoughts about the evidence that basically everybody who has some connection to the China portfolio in the Biden-Harris administration, from the president down to, sub-cabinet level senior positions, seems to have either connections to the Chinese Communist Party or is actually deeply compromised by it. As a serious national security professional, what should we make of that as a real, at least potential, point of further, sort of influence operations or subversion even by the Chinese Communist Party?
I would suggest we need a truth commission to allow everybody to come clean. I get it in the swamp. I understand in the deep state that everybody likes to wet their beak on the hot international economic situation. And until 2015, China was looked at as the wonderful future together. They were the panda. And I get it that powerful, influential people participated in things before 2015, 2016, because it was not generally understood and accepted the existential danger China was posing. Okay, got it.
This is the so-called engagement strategy that was actually very aggressively promoted by successive administrations, Republican and Democratic alike.
This goes back to the Clinton years of let's give them very sensitive space launch satellite data, because they're going to be our great future. Remember they bought a bunch of F-70 Black Hawk helicopters, our tried and true Black Hawk that's a mainstay of our armed services. There's a bunch of Black Hawks flying around China that they bought in the 90s. That's in the past. Got it. We now, just like an amnesty box when you're about to get on an airplane, everybody needs to empty their pockets, put it in the amnesty box. We'll forgive you. Come clean.
If you come clean, I think is your point. John, we've got so much more to talk with you about, but we are out of time for doing it today. I appreciate your availability and hope that we can get you back on next week to continue this conversation, in particular in one of your fields of particular expertise, the cyberspace and the threats that we're seeing from the Chinese Communist Party, the People's Liberation Army, and other entities in China, including so-called commercial enterprises, to our data, to our personal information, proprietary secrets, and national security. John, again, thank you for your service in all of these regards and for your time with us today. Come back to us again very soon, if you would. Next up, we're going to speak to another of our duty experts on the Committee on the Present Danger, China, particularly about the personnel piece, and that is Trevor Loudon, right after this.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, and we are joined, I'm very pleased to say, by Trevor Loudon. He is a filmmaker, he is an author, he is an essayist, he is a profoundly impactful public speaker, and what he has devoted those remarkable skills and qualities to over the years has been, among other things, the Chinese Communist Party's efforts to penetrate and influence and subvert us from within. And I'm very pleased that he is bringing those capabilities to bear in part through his participation in our Committee on the Present Danger, China. And I'm always pleased to have a chance to showcase some of his work, including today. Trevor, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Good to have you with us.
It's great to be on. Thank you, Frank.
I wanted to talk with you first and foremost about a woman I talk about in my commentary today, based in no small measure on your research into Deb Haaland. She is a sitting member of Congress who has been nominated to a sensitive position in the Biden-Harris administration's cabinet. Tell us what you found out about her, and then we'll talk a bit about what it could portend.
Well, Deb Haaland was engineered into that position by Judith LeBlanc, one of the top members of the Communist Party USA. And the Communist Party USA supports China, supports the Communist Party of China. And look, Deb Haaland was an obscure second-term congresswoman from New Mexico. She is of Native American extraction. And Judith LeBlanc is also, the communist, is also of Native American extraction. They formed a very close relationship. They worked together politically. And Judith LeBlanc has organized the campaign, petitions, seminars, webinars, that have put Deb Haaland in the front line for this position. It is completely down to Judith LeBlanc and the Communist Party. The question is, why would they want such a person in that position?
And that's where I wanted to go to with you next. I, again, speculated on some considerations for them. I think most of us, if we know anything about the Interior Department at all, think of the national parks and Smokey the Bear. What else does the Interior Department have responsibility for that might be of particular interest to communist enemies of this country, foreign and domestic?
Well, the Interior Department controls a huge amount of over 20% of United States energy and a lot of mining concessions as well, including very strategic minerals. So Haaland has a very strong record of opposing development. She is an activist herself. She was at Standing Rock, where they helped to set the stage for closing down the Dakota Access Pipeline, which Biden recently cancelled. And so
she's got control. She'll have control over energy, a huge amount of America's energy, a huge amount of America's mining resources, all of which are militarily and strategically significant. And she will also be involved in climate change policy, and which will also have a massive impact on the American economy. So if I was in China, I would be very happy. If I was in Beijing, I'd be very happy to put Deb Haaland in such a position, because she could give China a huge advantage over this country.
Yeah, in ways that we know they're targeting, no question about it. Tie in the Chinese Communist Party with the Communist Party of the USA. That's a link that I'm not sure we've made adequately, and it's pretty damning if it's a strong link.
Look, it's a completely strong link. You know, the Communist Party USA was once completely loyal to the Soviet Union. They were caught being funded by the Soviet Union on more than one occasion, including in the early 1990s. That was exposed. People went to court over that. But since that time, they have moved increasingly into the orbit of the Communist Party of China. They have regular delegations to Communist China. They propagandize for China in their publications. They have people living in China. Communist Party members are living in China, working in key Chinese institutions. There's no doubt that the Communist Party USA has traded its allegiance to Moscow for allegiance to Beijing. So that is, you've basically put someone who is a friend of a key Chinese agent into the Department of the Interior, leadership of the Department of the Interior. That's what will happen if Deb Haaland's nomination goes through.
Now, it's not clear that it will. She was narrowly approved by the Energy and Natural Resources Committee of the United States Senate yesterday. Her nomination will have to go to the full Senate for debate there. And my hope is, Trevor Loudon, that paper that you contributed mightily to at the accountabilityinitiative.com will get the attention of our senators and enable them to realize that they're dealing in this instance with someone who has not only radical views on, for example, the Green New Deal and, you know, restricting our use of fossil fuels, whether on federal lands or otherwise, but who has these deeply troubling, longstanding personal and ideological ties to a communist party inside the United States that has, as you say, a very troubling past history with the Soviet Union and what is now sort of its reorganized Chapter 11 version under Vladimir Putin, but also, more importantly at the moment, really, to this time's existential threat to freedom, as we were just hearing from Colonel John Mills in the previous segments, the Chinese Communist Party. Now, Trevor, alas, this individual, Deb Haaland, Congresswoman, designated Interior Secretary by Joe Biden, is not the only member of the senior ranks of the Biden administration who has troubling connections to the Chinese Communist Party, or CCP. It's, I think, imperative that we understand the magnitude of this problem. And you have done incredibly important work over many years, notably in the form of your book, The Enemies Within, and a film, a documentary film of the same name. Drawing on all of that expertise and research, how would you characterize the extent of the problem that we have? If personnel is policy, as we were talking about with John, what kind of personnel do we have in this regard in senior positions that have to do particularly with relations with Communist China in the Biden administration?
Well, look, this is extensive. there are many individuals in the Chinese, you know, for cabinet nominees, right throughout the defense infrastructure, the foreign policy infrastructure, and other critical areas that have ties to the Chinese Communist Party. And just by the way, Deb Haaland, if nominated, will be working closely with the chairman of the Natural Resources Committee in the Congress. That's Raul Grijalva, who used to write for the Communist Party newspaper and has attended Communist Party events in Tucson, Arizona, as recently as 3 or 4 years ago. So there'll be a very natural partnership there. But yeah, look, this is extremely troubling, Frank. If I was, you know, running Biden's appointments from China, if I was telling Biden who to appoint that would be favorable to China, I would be very, very happy right now. I'd be giving Biden top marks for following the Chinese line on appointment.
Well, a matter on which I have ruminated intensively in recent days, Trevor, is what on earth did Xi Jinping and Joe Biden talk about for 2 hours? And one of the things may well have been, you know, personnel that the CCP either was very pleased to see coming into his administration or would like to see in such roles. And we don't know, of course, what was said. I think for this reason, among others, we ought to insist upon a transcript of that conversation. It worries me greatly. Trevor, we're going to have to take a break in just a moment, but your book, Enemies Within, is, of course, something that drilled down on an enormous number of members of Congress. You've mentioned one member who is the chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee, but when we come back, I want to ask you to talk a bit about the magnitude of the problem that we see in this regard. And some of them may be directly tied to the Chinese Communist Party. Some of them may simply be tied to various socialist front groups. But you understand the connection between the two. And I'm hopeful that we'll be able to give our listeners a sense of the problem, well, literally from the commander-in-chief on down, as we look at the security of the United States and the Chinese Communist Party's determination to weaken, if not actually to destroy it from within, if possible. That and much more with Trevor Loudon right after this.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, and we're continuing this extraordinarily important conversation with Trevor Loudon, the author of The Enemies Within and a documentary filmmaker of a terrific movie of the same name. And Trevor, you have in those works documented, I think very persuasively, extensive ties that members of Congress and members of the United States Senate, some of whom are now retired, some of whom are still serving, some of whom are in very sensitive and senior positions, have to communism, to socialism, democratic socialism, you know, the progressive movement, whatever, you know, variation on the theme you wish. It's much in evidence in our Congress at the moment, as well as in the executive branch under Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. I guess I'd like you to give us sort of a microcosmic example of just how serious this problem is by talking about people who have been associated with and arguably products of the San Francisco Democratic Party.
Yeah, well, the The communists have always been very strong in San Francisco through Stanford University, through the International Longshore Workers Union. They've really almost run that city probably since the 1960s. And you'll see people coming forward like Feinstein, Senator Dianne Feinstein, who served on the Intelligence Committee in the Senate. You see Nancy Pelosi chaired the Intelligence Committee. And even when it was revealed that her office manager of 20 years was caught by the FBI spying for China, there were no implications for Dianne Feinstein. A woman who has worked to enable the Communist Party of China within America, who's got access for Communist China to global markets, to the World Trade Organization, etc. There were no repercussions. And the man spying in Dianne Feinstein's office, Russell Lowe, is connected to a young woman, Fang Fang, who was found to be a Chinese spy, sleeping with Eric Swalwell, who also serves on the House Intelligence Committee. When that was revealed, Nancy Pelosi refused to fire him, refused to take him off the committee. Well, Nancy Pelosi has a long history with the communist movement in San Francisco. She was close to Carlton Goodlatte. He was her mentor, a Communist Party member. She was close to the Hallinan family, a well-known San Francisco Communist Party family. So all of the, you know, both Feinstein and Pelosi come out of that San Francisco Communist Party left, and they have massive influence both in the Senate and the House.
Hard to overstate the influence that the Speaker of the House has, for example, as well as, you know, these members of the Intelligence Committee.
Well, exactly. And then you have Adam Schiff from the Los Angeles area, who also is a leading member of the Senate of the House Intelligence Committee, led the persecution of President Trump over bogus Russian collusion charges. He has worked for many years with the Committee of 100, which is probably China's leading influence operation in the United States. And he's been working with them for nearly 20 years now. So this hypocrisy is nothing new. Like in Connecticut, you have Chris Murphy, who's on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, who was also persecuting President Trump over alleged ties to Russia, while he had a Communist Party member, Max Goldman, serving as one of his key staffers. So he had a communist on his staff criticizing the President of the United States over bogus ties to Russia. But this is endemic. I've said there's at least 100 members of the House and 20 members of the U.S. Senate who couldn't pass a background check to drive a school bus. But there are no background checks in Congress or the Senate. And the Iranians and the Chinese and the Russians and the North Koreans and the Cubans and Venezuelans have been exploiting this weakness for some time now.
That's one of my favorite lines of all time, Trevor, and it speaks volumes about the situation in which we find ourselves. And sadly, the same, I think, has to be said of the President of the United States. And, oh, by the way, another product of the San Francisco Democratic Party machine, Kamala Harris, who seems increasingly to be the effective President of the United States in practical terms, if not in title. These are people whose relationships to China should cause Americans the gravest of concerns. Talk a little bit about them, if you would.
Well, look, Joe Biden has been, both Biden and Harris portrayed as moderate, old-fashioned Democrats. That's a complete lie. You know, Joe Biden started his political career under the auspices of a group called the Council for a Livable World. That was set up by a known Soviet agent called Leo Szilard to recruit senators who would work to gut the U.S. military. And Joe Biden has worked with that group right up until the last days of his vice presidency under Obama. The Council for a Livable World actually made their first ever endorsement for a presidential candidate with Joe Biden. And he has proudly trumpeted his work for this group, how they helped him negotiate the START treaty with Russia, the treaty that was so bad for America and so good for Putin that President Trump unilaterally cancelled it, and now Biden is going to reinstate. So he has effectively worked with America's enemies, Moscow and Tehran and Beijing, his entire political career. That's Joe Biden's background.
And just a word on that, Trevor, if one doubts the extent of the compromise specifically with respect to the Chinese Communist Party, look no further than Hunter Biden's laptop. And while information about that was massively suppressed prior to the election, it is available, and it requires the closest of scrutiny, I think, by all of us concerned about our national security. Talk a bit about Kamala Harris, if you would, quickly.
Well, Kamala Harris is a red diaper baby. Her father was an open Marxist. Her mother was an extreme leftist. She was, she had an affair with Willie Brown, who is basically the mayor of San Francisco, who turned that city with Dianne Feinstein over to the communist Chinese. He had an extensive Communist Party background, and she has worked with the Maoist communist left in San Francisco her entire political career. Her financial sugar daddy is Stephen Phillips, a very wealthy former Maoist communist from Stanford University, who worked with Maya Harris, Kamala's sister, in student radicalism. Her husband's company was very extensively involved with communist China. She has worked with Black Lives Matter, which is a Chinese operation, a communist Chinese operation. Everything about her points to links with China.
And sadly, it seems, Trevor, and I know you are working to develop background information on a number of others in the administration who have portfolios that touch on or are directly related to the U.S. relationship with communist China. But is it fair to say that basically everyone who is in such a role in this administration seems either to have a relationship with the Chinese or is actually compromised by them? I mean, I'm drilling down on this because I think this will probably cause people's heads to explode when they realize that, as we've been talking about throughout the hour, the purpose of the Chinese Communist Party, the stated purpose, is to destroy the United States. And people who are either, aligned with that policy or are at the very least susceptible to blackmail or coercion are not the sorts of folks you want making American national security policy. Trevor, I've asked a rhetorical question. I think you've answered it amply in the course of this show. But I just want to say this is vital work that you're doing. I appreciate it so much. And we're very grateful to you for taking the time to help us amplify it further so that more of us are aware. And most especially, those who are responsible for considering and acting on nominations of such people in the Pentagon, in the State Department, in the Interior Department, or elsewhere in the United States government, are informed and hopefully taking these topics up and perhaps using them to disqualify individuals who should not be anywhere near the reins of power. Thank you, my friend, for your time today. Come back to us again soon, if you would. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again on Monday. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.